All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseballs, the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseballs, the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis.
Baseballs, the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Oh, fantastic.
Fantastic. Fantastic?
Fantastic.
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 That would be what was edited out of episode one of this program, Geek Stuff, coming to you from the second floor of my house once again this week. And so Mr. Fantastic was telling me that we edited out about 63 ums.
No, 63?
63.
In a row?
Between you and I, 63 in the entire span of the first episode.
That's fantastic.
And that would be number two. some 32 extraneous uses of the word fantastic. Now, we have to qualify this.
Right.
Because that would not be references to our producer, Mr. Fantastic. That would be just calling things fantastic.
Okay, so this week we're going to say awesome. Everything is awesome.
Do we really have to go there?
All right.
Do we have to pick one word a week? Don't we have a vocabulary?
No, not so much.
It's transcendent. It's fabulous.
Fabulous. I like fabulous.
Maybe we should stay away from fabulous.
Yeah.
Anyway. Geek Stuff, episode two, The Search for episode three. There I go again.
Yeah,
four
right
seconds and I'm already ugh. God, I stink.
Unbelievable.
We're gonna get this thing rolling right now.
So we got some good stuff in the news this week. Most recently would be the renewal of the Simpsons 18th and 19th seasons. They gave them another 2 years.
Wow, 18 and 19?
Yeah, you know, I don't know why they didn't just push it to 20, go for the 3-year deal, but
that's weird.
2 years isn't so bad. Did you check out the live opening that they had this past Sunday?
I did. I put it on my DVR. I set to record on my DVR so I don't miss things. And I checked it out.
Yeah, it was kind of anticlimactic.
Eh.
And I read some stuff about how it was supposed to be such human representations of the characters. And for the most part, I didn't get that. It was clean. It looked nice. Interesting. But nothing super.
I think that's the primary reason why a live-action Simpsons would not work.
Well,
I mean, think about it. We're 17 years into exactly who these characters are, you know? And to try to then humanize them, I think this was a feeler, to be honest with you. I think that
Take it further?
I think Fox is feeling it out.
No?
Oh,
well, I hope it didn't do well then.
I hope it didn't do well either.
Because I don't think it would translate at all to a live action show. It's an animated show.
Yeah.
It should stay that way. Successful.
Yeah.
For 17 years.
Yeah. Fuck Fox.
Yeah. Fuck Fox. Next would be the announcement of the possible Joker for the next Batman filmed. His name is Lachey. L-A-C-H-Y. I don't know. Hume. He was Sparks in Matrix Revolutions.
Lachey Hume.
I couldn't find anything else on him other than he was Sparks in Matrix Revolutions.
Who the hell is Sparks?
Exactly.
Was that kid?
You know, I don't even remember. I haven't seen Revolutions in a while.
And this guy is going to be the Joker in the new Batman movie?
Apparently. At least that's what they're talking about. Well, so, you know, I guess they wanted to go with a nobody.
Apparently they're not seeking my approval.
Well, I mean, I saw an image of him. He looks all right. I guess they could fit him into the role as far as, you know, him up. But
here
I don't know what his acting ability is. That's a tough role to tackle, the Joker.
What happened to, what was the last one we heard? Johnny Depp.
I had heard Johnny Depp for a while. That would have been interesting. Although, too Wonka. No?
Too Wonka. It's the Joker. Yeah. It's the clown prince of crime.
Yeah, I know who he is.
I caution you to look around the studio before you make comments.
I love Johnny Depp. I just don't know that he could fall into
that
role.
Whoa. Now, stop right there. Before you give the audience the impression that you're looking around the studio and seeing massive amounts of Johnny Depp memorabilia, that's not what I meant.
Okay.
What I meant was there's a large section of Joker memorabilia here in the studio.
It's true. You're a Joker fan.
That's true.
Nobody would question it.
Which is why I am scrutinizing this decision very carefully. I don't know this guy Hume. And first of all, to have to go back and actually watch the second or third Matrix movie to get a feel for this guy, I'm not feeling that.
That's what I mean. I mean, I didn't even watch the movie barely the first time, let alone to go back
and now
watch
I
got to
find somebody,
time.
And he has a name, and
There's not much information up on IMDb. I looked him up. No photo, really. Not much film credits, so.
Well, let's pray it's a mistake.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something I'm looking at here, Matt, in the news. Marvel Comics is gearing up for Civil War.
Oh, God.
I just don't understand Marvel anymore. And it's a good thing that the news segment on today's episode is a short one. Because I'd really like to, you know, jot this down, Mr. Fantastic. We have to talk about Joe Quesada and how he's running this company.
Into the ground.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous now. Now it's just getting ridiculous.
But to go from House of M, right? Fantastic, great.
Well, now slow down. House of M, for the uninitiated, House of M was a storyline that ran through many of the X-Men titles and some of the, well, I guess probably most of the other non-X-Men titles as well, which told of a world where mutants were the majority and humans were the minority or something like that. And anyway, while that wasn't so great, the aftermath of it has proven to be at least interesting.
Okay.
But before we can even calm down, relax, figure out what's going on, get our head resettled into this new world, this new post-House of M world has only 198 mutants in it.
Jeez.
Some of your favorite characters, some of our favorite characters, some of the favorite characters have been stripped of their powers and they're just regular people. So there's some interesting stories to be told there, and they are being told in some of those books.
Right.
Before we can even get a feel for the new world, Marvel is launching us into Civil War.
And exactly what is Civil War?
Okay, let me see if I can explain it. I don't fucking know. Because there's nothing, there's only pictures, and it's a splash of a bunch of Marvel characters. I mean, right now what I'm looking at is I'm looking at the big two-page color advertisement in this week's Comic Shop News. And I have to tell you, this tells me nothing. It says, there is a change in the air. War drums are beating. Lines are drawn. War is upon us. Whose side are you on? So, I guess there's sides, And we, the reader, are supposed to pick which side we're siding with. Are we going to side with these characters that we've always enjoyed? Or these other characters that we've always enjoyed or not enjoyed? And are we somehow involved in the outcome? I doubt it. A Marvel Comics event in 7 parts beginning 5306. I don't get it. I mean, I don't. Not only do I not get this event, I don't understand why we're still doing these massive world crossovers, what, every 3 or 4 months.
What do you think the chances are that it's even going to affect regular Marvel continuity, though? Maybe it'll be outside of the House of M stuff.
I say it affects Marvel continuity, Matt, for 7 months. Or until the next multi-part stupid-ass storyline.
Well, there's always another one around the corner. Has been that way for years. It's one of Marvel's biggest downfalls.
But, you know, it kind of, you know, from time to time, they calm down with the "we have to tell the massive storyline" bullshit. You know, occasionally they stop doing that.
Occasionally.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm at my wit's end with Marvel. But I think we should definitely discuss Marvel and Joe Quesada at length at another time.
All right, well, put them on the list.
Mr. Fantastic, note down, Joe Quesada is destroying Marvel Comics and the comic industry. Oh, I like that.
And while we're talking about Marvel, why don't we talk about the Blade miniseries that'll be coming our way later this year. I think it's June of this year. It's scheduled to come out.
Have you seen any of that?
Just a couple of stills, and I'm not impressed by what I see, although they're saying the production value of the episodes are going to be quite high. They're putting a lot of money into making it look pretty.
I think the people who are assessing the quality, I think they're the ones who are high, because I've seen it, and it looks
terrible.
$2 million
an episode is the budget, it looks like.
$2 million an episode?
$2 million an episode, it looks like, is the budget.
Yeah, but we had to lose Farscape at $1 million an episode.
Well, yeah.
Whatever.
I don't agree with that either, but...
And who's the clown playing Blade?
Oh, God, I don't even know his name. Don't even know his name. But I'm not impressed. I think the movies were perfect the way they were, and they should not be touching it.
And whether they were perfect or not, I mean, it's just... It's ridiculous. I just think it's... I mean, why? Why go to TV? You've done 3 movies.
Because they're trying to cash in.
It's not even a cash in thing. They know Wesley Snipes will never do another one. And since he mailed in the performance on the 3rd one.
Right. It was stolen by Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, I thought was fantastic.
What else we got going on?
DC Direct is doing an interesting thing that I don't understand. DC Direct is releasing, they're calling it DC Direct Reactivated, offering 4 of the most requested DC action figures in new editions. So what they're doing is they're taking figures that have been requested. People have requested these figures, and I'll tell you what they are in a second. And what they've done is now they've gone back, they've reworked them somehow, they've given them a new head sculpt, I imagine, maybe new hand sculpts.
They're not going to be kitchen sinks, are they?
No, thank God.
Okay.
Kitchen
Just
sink
sure.
for the glossary. Kitchen sink would be any time you take a character, let's take the most famous one, Batman. You can go to your Toys R Us right now and find 30 kitchen sink Batmans. It's pretty much any Batman where he does not appear in either the classic gray and black or the more Silver Age blue and gray costume.
Right.
You'll see him in fluorescent colors. He'll have accessories he's never, ever been seen using.
Or would ever use. They're ridiculous, some of them.
Yeah. Or have never seen being used in the cartoon.
Or the books.
Or in the books or anything else. These are pretty much made up to impress small children.
Yeah. Silly. Yep. Very silly.
Well, anyway.
And they don't sell.
And they don't sell. And nobody ever listens.
They sit on the pegs.
Well, DC Direct reactivated... Line 1 will include Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and there's my problem right there.
Of course.
The 4th figure, however, is Lobo. Now, that makes sense to me.
Sure, it's a good figure. Interesting. I don't think he's had, what, one figure
he's had one
in the DC Direct line so
in
far?
In the DC Direct line, and it was a box set. Don't forget, DC Direct, in the early days, when they were questioning whether a character was going to sell or not, they bulked it out. And in Lobo's case, they bulked him out with his bike. whatever
right,
thing
right,
is
okay.
that he rides.
I remember the set.
Enemy Ace, they bulked him out with a little plane and
right.
the wolf and some other accessories. They bulked him out. They bulked out Metamorpho. They bulked out Solomon Grundy, who was a bit larger of a figure, Gorilla
right,
Grodd,
right.
and so on and so forth. And the sales on them were perhaps a little bit questionable because their price was so much more for one figure. Fine, it's a larger figure, so you expect to pay a little more for it.
Sure.
But, I mean, it seemed very odd that they would choose to box the figures the way that they did. But now, at least, it seems like enough people probably bitched and moaned about Lobo, it would seem.
At the very least.
For Series 1. That they're going to go back, they're going to release a Lobo figure. I've seen it. It looks great. And I'm excited to see what the head sculpts are going to be. I don't understand doing Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. There's at least, if there is less than half a dozen, 6 to 8 regular Batman figures out there from DC Direct, I would be surprised. If there are less than almost the same amount, maybe slightly less of Superman, and I know Wonder Woman, there's at least 4 or 5.
And Superman seems kind of silly, too, especially with a movie on the horizon. You know there's going to be plenty of other Superman product out there. And then in the coming months, why put him in that line? Put somebody else in.
Yeah, like Enemy Ace.
Yeah, anybody.
Like Metamorpho. I mean,
sure.
Perhaps
sure.
not with as many bells and whistles as he originally came with in the box set, but it would make sense to put him out.
Right.
You know, in reduced form, just like they're doing with Lobo. It makes sense to do it. I don't understand why Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. That one I don't get.
Especially for DC Direct, who normally doesn't pander to that kind of mentality. With their stuff. I mean, DC Direct has put out some really obscure figures in the past. So to do it again with these major characters is just baffling.
I don't understand it. Perhaps what we need to do is we need to go and ask DC Direct.
Well, lastly, for the new segment this week, we've got more potential news surrounding the Watchmen movie.
Okay, now this excites me because I loved V for Vendetta, which we're going to get into later.
Right.
And if that is the kind of movie that can be made of an Alan Moore story, as opposed to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was not so good, I'm excited to hear anything about Watchmen. What do you got?
Well, it looks like Zack Snyder, who directed The New Dawn of the Dead, came out a few years back,
uh-huh.
and is currently helming the 300 project, the Frank Miller
uh-huh.
Story
right
is in negotiations right now with Warner Brothers to potentially direct the Watchmen film, to helm up that project.
Now, I have heard for years that there is somebody, and now I'm wondering if it's him, because I want to say that it probably isn't him, Zack Snyder. Somebody has been working on developing this project underground without a studio behind him. And I wish, at the moment, I can't remember his name. Remember we were hearing
I do.
That?
I know who you're talking about. And I think it was a lot of script work that he was working
on.
No,
it wasn't only script work. It was script work. It was schematics. It was character designs, costume design, background design. I mean, it was set design. It was really it was kind of very comprehensive. And from what I heard,
mm-hmm.
it was fantastic. Right.
So
wait.
Right.
No, it was awesome.
Awesome. There you go. The word of the week. Awesome.
It was
yeah, I don't know. But anyway, needless to say.
It was very good.
It could be exciting. I like Dawn of the Dead. I've heard a lot of good things about 300. Again, Watchmen though is a project where you really have to kind of handle it with kid gloves because the fans are just insane
right.
about the storyline and about the importance of that particular graphic novel and story.
Right. And much the way that they are about V, the diehards, I'm sure that Watchmen is going to have even more fanatical response to a film.
I'm sure. But we're going to have to kind of follow it over the coming months and see what comes. I mean, there have been rumors floating around for years, so who knows if anything will actually come from this.
Right.
You know, maybe
right.
based on the success of V, it's got a really good chance.
All right. Well, Mr. Fantastic is indicating that it is time for our first break.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Matt, I just got a brand new 2-pound bag of Jelly Belly jelly beans. They come in 49 flavors, all of which I'm going to read for you right now. Berry Blue, Blueberry, Bubblegum.
Jelly Belly is the original gourmet jelly bean, a fat-free candy with only 4 calories per bean.
Cotton candy, A&W cream soda, crushed pineapple, Dr. Pepper.
You can go to jellybelly.com to find recipes on how to combine your favorite jelly bellies to come up with new and exciting flavors like mud pie and berry smoothie.
Orange juice, orange sherbet, peach, peanut butter, pina colada, pink grapefruit, plum, raspberry.
And with Easter just around the corner, now is the perfect time to get Jelly Bellies for your entire family.
Strawberry daiquiri, strawberry jam, tangerine, toasted marshmallow, top banana.
That's Jelly Belly, the original gourmet jelly bean.
Jelly Bellies, available at a store near you.
Did you go?
Of course I went. It was our deal. I would go and you would read it.
Did you read it? Were you sitting 2 seats away from me?
I certainly was.
That's right, I went. I've seen it 3 times now.
Wow. Yeah, well. We're sick.
I like
No, it's a great movie. It's worth seeing 3 times. Easily.
So tell me, is that your conclusion about the movie, that it was great? Do you have any more to say about the movie?
Well, yeah, I loved it. I thought it looked great. I thought it sounded great. I thought Hugo Weaving was excellent. I only have one complaint about him in the role, and it really wasn't him. I think it was a logistics. At times, I thought it was kind of hard to hear some of his dialogue. Between the mask and the score in the background, there were at least 3 or 4 times during the movie where certain lines kind of got dropped out, I think, because of the music.
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't too bad. I mean, you can pick it all up and you don't lose the feel or anything. You don't get pulled out of it too much, but it was something I noticed. And, you know, he's talking through a mask the entire movie, so it's bound to happen, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I can see that.
You know, I thought about it for a bit. I kind of weighed how they could have fixed it. And the only thing that I could have thought about was if they had him record the lines without the mask on, but it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have felt as natural.
I'll tell you what they needed. They needed a Mr. Fantastic on sound. That's what they needed.
That's what they needed?
If they had had that, they wouldn't have had any problems at all.
No worries.
That's what I'm saying.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So what'd you think about the book? Did you reread it?
I was enraptured by reading the book again, and I haven't for such a long time, and I can tell you my impressions of the book are that it is as thick as I remember, and thick in the sense, not in the sense that it's, you know, you could stick it under the busted couch leg thick.
You
but,
could.
It's very heavy. It's very, it's dark. It's, you know, it's very intense.
Intense is a good word.
You can see where the Wachowski brothers, when writing the screenplay, you can see where what they were trying to capture. So in regards to the book, I say it's fantastic. It's definitely something that anyone should read. You don't need to be a comic fan. Anybody should read this.
Definitely. It's not, it's actually very untraditional, I think, for comic fans. It's traditional for Alan Moore, but it's untraditional for comic fans. And I don't think you need to be a comic fan at all to read it. I think you can read it just as an enjoyable piece of literature.
Right, right. And with that, let's talk about what we promised we would. How does the book compare to the film? Now, I'm going to start off by saying, well, obviously it doesn't compare to the film at all. It doesn't compare in any way whatsoever to the film. It's much more involved. It's much more integral. It's much more intricate.
Okay.
Is the word I was looking for there. While the story and the elements remain the same, the book is obviously going to be different than the film. I don't understand this argument that people have. And I understand that we're the ones that brought up this argument. But it's the same thing with any book to film translation. Everybody's impression is the book is always better.
It, especially in recent history, it happens every time. Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, and now V for Vendetta. It happens every time. And some people aren't able to separate the book from the movie. And you have to treat them as separate entities because they really are. And they're really for two different audiences to a certain extent. And there are things you have to do in film that you can't do in a book and vice versa. So I understand the changes. There are some things that I thought were pretty big, but I understand them.
Right. And I'll say this too. I agree with the criticism that the diehard V for Vendetta fans are throwing their hands up in the air and saying, oh, I can't believe they didn't do this or they did do that. And I can't believe that the ending is different. So I'm going to ruin the book ending for everybody right now. In the book, Evie takes over the role of V.
Exactly.
And she picks up the mask and puts it on and she continues the process that V started. But I think the film is different. The way that the film is structured, it almost seems as if there's no need for Evie to continue doing V's work. It almost seems like his goal in the film is accomplished, and therefore there doesn't need to be an extension of his assignment, his mission, if you will.
Yeah, I think, well, in a way he kind of did pass the role on to Evie by allowing her to pull the lever in the subway to set off the bomb that would eventually blow up Parliament. I really think it's fanboys wanting to see Natalie Portman put on the mask and go through some of the motions. I really think that's a lot of it because I agree with you. I think that it's a big change and I can understand why you'd be upset, but I don't think it's huge in the scope of the film.
And it doesn't need to be, you know, in the sense in the book, there are things that are way more involved than they need to be in the film. And here's two great examples. You have Prothero, who's referred to as the voice. And in the book, in the film, he's referred to as the voice of London or the voice of England, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it was London.
The point is that in the book, the government structure is set up like a body. So there's the head and the fingermen and the voice and so on. And the voice in the book has an obsession with his doll collection.
Right.
He's kind of a weird cat in the book.
It's a good scene.
And he has a doll collection and he doesn't kill, V does not kill him in the book.
Correct.
V burns his dolls and destroys his dolls and it drives him crazy. It makes him crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes him lose his mind.
Correct.
In the film, although there you can see some dolls on the shelves in the background, which is a nice sort of
homage
to the book, it's not an integral part of that character in the movie. Yet you don't lose one bit of that character's importance by not having that aspect of the character.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And it makes a lot more sense in terms of the film V for Vendetta for V to kill him than to just leave him alive and drive him insane.
Right.
Because of the way that the film story is structured.
Sure, sure.
The other example is the priest.
That's a big one. And actually, a lot of people have been talking about the fact that in the movie, the death sequences were all very similar. Whereas in the book, each one had unique features to it as to how he killed it. And the priest one is an excellent example. In the book, I think that was a great, great scene.
Right.
I mean, he gives the priest comes in and, you know, V comes in and he gives the priest a piece of Eucharist that's poisoned with cyanide,
I think it is.
And he tells the priest that when it passes through his lips, it's supposed to be transubstantiated into the body of Christ. And if his beliefs are true or something to that effect, he'll be okay. And obviously he gives him the Eucharist and the priest dies. I kind of missed that because I thought that was really clever and I liked it.
Right. In the sense of the book, it's it's fleshed out. It's a fully rendered and fleshed out scene. In the sense of the movie, where you have, what, 2 hours and change that they wanted to tell this story in?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really sacrifice all the time to expand it out? I mean, that it really is a gray area there.
Well, they run into the problem of, the problem of what cuts to make. So it looks like maybe they made a decision to go for uniformity throughout rather than make just specific cuts so that it was more cohesive as a story.
And it also makes sense for the film to not follow exactly each and every plot of the book, because they're not putting, again, this is not Sin City.
Right.
Sin City, you can see the panels of the book. If you're familiar at all with the book, you can see the panels of the book in the film.
Sure, it jumps off the screen.
You don't really get that here. I mean, you get some of that here, but you don't. That wasn't their goal here. Their goal, the Wachowski brothers anyway, who wrote the film, their goal was to make a V for Vendetta movie. Their vision of a V for Vendetta movie.
Right. Again, people have the problem of separating the two. It's this problem every time one of these movies comes around. It's the problem with every comic book movie that comes out. There's constantly people who are unable to separate the two rather than treat them as a separate entity. You almost have to treat it as like Ultimate V.
Right.
It's a retelling, modernization of...
horrendously awful example, but I mean, good example, but bad concept from Marvel Comics. So just for the people that don't know, Marvel Comics has a line of comics called the Ultimates, or rather Ultimates. So you have Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Avengers,
Ultimate Fantastic Four, Ultimate...
and so on. Right. And it's basically a couple years ago, they went back and restarted all of these books, retold the origins, updated them, modernized them, and so on and so forth. And this exists as a separate universe from the standard Marvel universe that's been going on since the 30s and 40s. It's just a crap idea.
Oh, see, I like it.
Okay.
But
well, you're a crap idea.
Well, exactly. We'll save that.
V, I think they did a fine job. I think the movie is a snapshot of the book.
I agree.
And I think that you would do well, anybody would do well, to both read the book and see the film. I don't think you're losing anything by doing both.
No, not at all.
I think if anything, if you see the film, what really should happen is it should make you want to read the book. I'll give you another recent example of that. Constantine. I don't read Hellblazer. Constantine, recent movie with Keanu Reeves. As in the role of John Constantine. Who else is in that?
I don't know. Rachel I haven't Weiss. Actually seen Constantine. So
here we go again.
Yeah, I know.
Will you please see a movie that's based on a comic book so we can discuss it on this program?
Because I've never seen any of them. I missed one or two here.
Apparently
and there.
Not.
I missed Constantine.
Apparently
I apologize.
Not.
Loan it to me and I'll watch it.
Great. Unbelievable. Constantine. So yes. You have Keanu Reeves playing John Constantine. The book that it's based on is called Hellblazer. It's been running for a really long time. John Constantine in the comics, blonde hair, brown trench coat. Keanu Reeves, black hair, black trench coat. And what do you think happened?
Everybody went berserk.
The comic people went berserk.
Of course.
He can't be black-haired and black-coated. They went nuts. But the point is that when I got out of Constantine, I wanted to read Hellblazer. I think the same thing should be true for anybody that sees V for Vendetta, the film. They should want to go out and read the book. And then what you'll see is you'll see the missing parts that we've been discussing here.
Right. And hopefully you'll appreciate them and appreciate Alan Moore's writing, which, you know, is another interesting part about the movie. His name not mentioned in the credits at all.
He gave all his rights to this book to David Lloyd. Which is why in the film credits, it says, based on the graphic novel illustrated by David Lloyd.
Right.
So Alan Moore isn't getting a dime for V for Vendetta, the film, but David Lloyd is. So good for David Lloyd.
Correct. It's Alan Moore for you. He's a recluse
and
a nut bar.
He's a creep.
He's and a little nutty.
I keep hearing he's retiring from comics.
Well,
that's what I keep hearing. Maybe after Watchmen gets made, he'll just be so fed up with everything.
He'll leave forever. He'll never come. He'll move into a small hut in England somewhere, and we'll never hear from him again.
He'll never work for DC again. He'll never work for Marvel again.
You know, he's going to start an independent company?
I heard the story went something like he signed a deal with Jim Lee to do Wildstorm books, and then Jim sold Wildstorm to DC, which kind of
killed that deal because he won't deal with
something
DC.
Like that.
Well,
I think we did our homework on V.
Yeah, I think
we've said everything we can say.
Read the book, see the movie.
I'll tell you this much.
What?
My Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah? Anything like the Hellboy Halloween costume from the...
You know that Hellboy Halloween costume was badass.
Yeah, I'm not knocking the Hellboy Halloween costume.
That Hellboy Halloween costume was something.
Top notch.
Shut up.
It was!
I thought so.
I'm agreeing.
All right.
All right.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's bigkevsgeekstuff.com. I fucking hate you guys.
Talking about Pirates of the Spanish Main today. It's a new, well, not really new, I guess now it's 4 expansions in, but it's a collectible game where you get to build ships, little plastic ships. It's a strategy type game.
Ooh, little plastic ships. We play this on a tabletop then.
We certainly do. And hopefully with some three-dimensional islands, some little tiny dice.
The great thing about Pirates of the Spanish Main is that when you buy a pack, and again, you can get these at your local comic book store, sure, or your gaming store, you get a pack, and what it seems like you're getting is a pack of like credit cards. Not that you'll be able to charge anything on them, but you get this pack of credit cards, and the credit cards are actually die cut. So you can actually punch pieces out of this credit card material.
They're the game pieces.
Yeah, and you assemble. Some of the ships have one or two or three cards with different pieces, and then you assemble this little pirate ship.
Right.
It's pretty fantastic.
It is, but it's great for anybody who's into miniature gaming. Little assembly required. No painting required. If you don't like painting, it's all pre-colored for you.
Painted.
Really, just pop it out, put it together, and you're practically ready to play.
What do you what do you get in these packs?
Each pack, you should get 2 ships, I believe, an island, which is your essential terrain to play the game. You should also get some treasure tokens and unique items and stuff like that. It's your booty, if you will. And you also get crew members for your ship that have like special abilities and special tasks that they can do to enhance the game and the ship's abilities.
And so you're going to get 2 players together. Let's say you each get a pack. There's instructions in there?
Correct. Comes with 2 sets of instructions, 1 set dedicated to just putting the ships together, and then one set of instructions. Well, some of the more difficult ships, the 5-mast ships, you need a little bit of guidance and help. But so it comes with that, and also comes with gameplay instructions with all the little intricacies and rules and expansions from the previous set.
Okay, so now we've built our ships, we have some crew, we have a little island. What's the play area?
I don't think that they give you a recommended play area in the instructions, but on average, from what I've seen, having played the game myself, it's probably 3 foot by 3 foot. Is what you need to play a good expansive game with multiple ships in your fleet.
Right. So you're looking at like a nice tabletop, like a dining room table or a card table.
Correct.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's right. I said fantastic twice in this segment. Twice.
All right. One of the other great things about the game is for people who are into terrain sculpting, you can actually make your own islands. And I've seen some fantastic tabletops that have been put together with foam islands. I've even made a couple myself. So,
is that right? And what this would be kind of the foam insulation. Usually comes in large pink or blue.
Yeah,
sheets.
I buy the big pink foam board from Home Depot.
Right.
Comes in like a 9 foot sheet, foot by 2.5 feet, something along those lines.
And you can get a
foam cutter.
Foam cutter.
Yeah, if you don't have a foam cutter, you can use an X-Acto knife, although it takes really long to do. A foam cutter would be the best.
It's basically a foam cutter is it's a heated piece of wire that just simply, it slices like a knife through butter. It slices right through the foam core.
Right, and you get great design. You have great control over the little cuts and crevices in each island. And then, you know, a little bit of paint and a couple of other accessories. You can put together some really, really nice terrain to play the game with.
And this is, I see that a lot of people are playing this game.
It is. It's caught on, actually.
Really starting to catch on.
Oh, it's by WizKids, by the way, which I should mention, who puts out HeroClix.
Right.
So it's probably their second or third best game, I would say, out there now. Out of the products that they put out?
Oh, yeah, I would say. HeroClix is another miniatures game, where the miniatures come pre-painted. They feature comic book characters from DC, Marvel,
and
some independents, right?
Hellboy, Witchblade, etc.
Right, and again, it's a tabletop game where, you know, you pick your group. You know, they all have point values and powers and so on and so forth. Your opponent picks his group, and then you maneuver the pieces around. It's kind of like open field chess. You know, it's almost similar to a chess in the sense that you're moving pieces around, but without the constraints of having to move in blocks
within certain
spaces. It's very, very popular.
It is.
That's been going on for quite a while.
And Pirates now is catching on. Like I said earlier, it's in its fourth expansion. The first expansion or first set was Pirates of the Spanish Main, which was followed by Pirates of the Crimson Coast.
Uh-huh.
Pirates of the Revolution was after that.
And you're getting different ships in all of these.
You are. Different ships, different nationalities also. That's another component of the game. You have different nationalities that you get to play. If you want to play Pirates, you can, but you also have the option to play the French, the Spanish, the English, Barbary Corsairs when you get to Pirates of the Barbary Coast. America. There's an American fleet also, which is introduced in Pirates of the Revolution.
Right.
And then in Pirates of the South China Seas, South China Seas, which is the newest expansion, you get to play, some new classification of pirate.
And South China Seas, now these start to become, more oriental in design.
Correct. Both the character designs and the ship designs.
And maybe you can tell me a little bit more about how the characters, now you get cards that have characters on it.
Correct.
And how did the characters come into play?
Well, there are two different types of characters. There are generic crew members such as explorers and hunters and oarsmen and the ship repair guys. I can't think of their name right now. But anyway, they allow you to do specific tasks to enhance how you play the game. For example, an explorer allows you to look at the treasure on an island a little bit easier than if you didn't have him on your ship. It's like a special ability that you're attaching to the ship.
Okay,
the ship itself is the actual important game piece.
So I think I'm following you. We're on a tabletop. We put a little island in the middle. You start on one side with your ship. I start on my side with the other ship or ships. And we're sailing to this island in order to get the treasure.
Right. The goal of the game being to get the most treasure back to your home island.
I see.
Or your home port.
Right.
So the crew will help you to do that. It'll help you to attack your other ships because there's a combat portion of the game as well.
I suspected.
And it also helps you with the exploring and gathering of treasure. And then there are specific characters within the game as well. Captain Jack Hawkins, wonder where they got that name from, who allows you extra build points, I believe, and it allows you an action turn, so you have an advantage over your opponent.
Are these characters, are they based on historical characters? You don't know the answer, do you?
I don't think so.
No, you don't think so?
I don't. Some of them might be, but I mean, I haven't seen any like Henry Morgans or Calico Jack.
Is every pirate named Jack?
Yes, every pirate is named Jack.
Every pirate since that movie.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I tell you what, Matt, you seem like you really know what's going on with this game.
It's great. I love it. I love playing it.
And so you've been playing it for a while.
Yeah, I've actually gotten to some terrain building, and I've been playing since it started coming out.
And I haven't played it.
Well, we're going to have to change that then.
Okay, so you have a lot of experience and have played the game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I've never played it. I looked over a pack today to familiarize myself.
Okay.
With at least to the extent one can familiarize oneself with the game.
Right. Without playing.
I want to play you.
Okay.
I think we should play before next week.
Sure.
And we should come back and tell the results. I want pirates.
Okay.
I want to pick the pirate nationality.
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's fine. I'll pick, I'll go with the Americans.
Okay. So it'll be Big Kev with the Pirates, Matt with the Americans, and I think I'm going to swamp you.
I don't know. It's big talk for someone who's never played.
I don't know. I feel confident. I feel like my knowledge of the pirate world will help me win this challenge. That's what I think.
Is that a fact?
I think it's only and simply based on my superior intellect for strategy and my intense love of pirate culture.
Ooh.
That will carry me, the person who has never played the game, through to victory.
All right. Well, I'll have to see. I don't think that you're going to win, but that's just my opinion.
Okay.
I've got some good fleets built up. Just letting you know now.
All right. So I'm going to have to go out and buy some of these.
Or you can borrow some of mine. I've got plenty.
What's the, I don't want to use your tainted, you'll probably mess them up somehow so that I sink or something.
Marked deck.
Yeah, that's it. What are these packs going to run me?
They go for $3.99 a pack.
And am I going to get a pirate in every pack?
Not guaranteed, no.
Oh, so I'll get different. Oh, I see. So I only have a random shot of getting pirate ships. Is that how it works?
Correct. You don't actually, all the packs are blind packs, so you don't know what you're getting.
Oh. I see your strategy.
You might get no pirate ships.
All right. But you know what? I'll tell you what. Here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to get packs until I get some pirate ships to take you on.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Fine.
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 This weekend.
Fine.
We'll play in the studio.
In the studio?
In the studio.
We got to make sure and take pictures.
Definitely.
Of me kicking your ass.
Yeah.
Get back up here. This is a song about a guy you might remember from high school. Or you might be this guy from high school. I don't know. My little harmonica. I got my 12-sided die, and I'm ready to roll with a wizard and my goblin crew. My friends are coming over to my mom's basement, bringing Funyuns and the Mountain Dew. I got a big broadsword made out of cardboard, and that stereo's a pumping Zeppelin. It's that time of the night, we turn on the black light, let the Dungeons and the Dragons begin. It's D&D, fighting with the legends of yore. It's D&D. Never kissed a lady before.
Nope.
Woo! Now the Lord of the Rings, the dark crystal and things, we use these as a reference tool. And when we put on our cloaks and tell warlock jokes, we're the coolest kids at the school. No, we're not.
I know.
Now Tack's a real bastard, but a fair dungeon master. He's got hit points and charisma to lend. And I rehearse in my room, or what I call the dragon's tomb, when I'm out with my girlfriend. It's D&D.
Wait, wait. Sorry. You got a girlfriend?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a... No.
It's D&D. Warriors that terrify. It's D&D. Virgins till the day we One, two, three, four, die.
Stephen Lynch, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mark Tyke.
And we're back on Geek Stuff. Ugh.
You suck.
I know. Anyway, you know, I've been thinking about this.
Okay.
We're going to talk a lot about Star Wars
mm-hmm.
on this, the phenomenon that is Star Wars on this show.
Sure.
I think we need to make a conscious effort not to talk about Star Wars next week.
Okay, that's easy enough. There's plenty out there to talk about.
We're just going to have Star Wars-free weeks.
Sure, fine.
Because we're about to enter again into the Star Wars universe with regards to toys this time.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the shocking demise right now of a line that Matt and I both consider one of the best Star Wars toy lines out there. And what's stunning about the fact that Matt and I both agree on this is the fact that these are not action figures.
Correct.
They have no articulation whatsoever, and I am the biggest proponent of not calling something a toy or not calling something an action figure or not classifying it as an action figure, which these are classified by Hasbro as mm-hmm. action figures, when they have no action. This is a small, inexpensive plastic statue.
Correct.
They retail for what, $12?
Something
13
around,
bucks. 13 maybe,
bucks, somewhere around
like
there.
That? Well, they did anyway,
right.
Because they're gone.
Disappeared.
Hasbro
off the shelves.
Has decided that these figures didn't cut the mustard and that they are gone. They're removing them from the overall Star Wars line.
I want to know how they came to that decision.
I can't understand it.
I mean, when they sell out continually, all of them sell out continually, all of them do well. When they come out, it was a successful line. What was the decision? Why the decision to change it, to cut it?
I mean, the sculpting, probably the best sculpting on any Hasbro product ever. I mean, these are statues. These are statues. They're little plastic statues. You might, you know, if you're a Star Wars fan and you have a favorite character and he's on the list, what did we come up with? 18 before we started this?
At least 18.
There's got to be more than that,
yeah.
Though. And you know, you might have a favorite character. Let's say you like Yoda, and you want it, and you see that the Yoda Unleashed is coming out, and he's fantastic because these figures they come they're almost like a little scene. They come on a little base. Yoda particularly comes with this dynamic piece of clear plastic that indicates that he's jumping. It's
awesome. The bases have purpose, unlike a lot of other toys, where the bases are useless and serve no purpose.
Right.
These bases really, really complete the piece.
And you don't pose these figures. They are sculpted in a dynamic action pose most times.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not an action pose, it's certainly a pose that you're familiar with. There's a wide variety of characters that they've done. Good luck getting some of them because some of them are so rare. I don't even have some of these.
Sure.
And I collected the line, and I don't even have some of these.
Plenty that I'm missing that I really wish that I had.
And Hasbro, in their infinite wisdom, have decided that these figures, which are some four to six to seven inches tall.
Yeah.
By and large. They have decided what they're going to do with the Unleashed line is cancel it as it is. They have, I think, one more line is coming out in the spring.
That's what I've heard.
And they have since gone back and they have miniaturized figures. Let's call them 1.5 to 2 inches tall. Let's call them 2 inches tall.
Right.
They're tiny little figures. They come some 3, 4, 5 to a pack.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called Unleashed, Star Wars Unleashed. It's part of the Unleashed line, according to Hasbro.
Correct.
And you get 4 or 5 of these figures at 2 inches tall that serve no purpose whatsoever.
No. And
they individually, they're boring as sin.
The paint isn't great on them, to be honest with you. I'm not impressed with the sculpt on the miniature figure. I mean, compared to the product that they were putting out, they're crap. There's no doubt about it. They're just crap. And why Hasbro would choose, to make this decision. Hasbro, who has put out Star Wars toys for years, who has put out any character you can think of, if a character was on a screen for a millisecond, they've put out a figure in their line. Why cut it after 20 or 30 figures? Beyond me. I don't know a single fan of this line who's happy that it's getting cut, who thinks that the line has run its course or that its time is up. It just makes no sense. No sense.
I grabbed one. Here it is. It's the Unleashed Battle Packs. That's what they're called. I have the Battle of
Utapu.
Is that how we say that?
I believe so.
Clone Trooper Attack Battalion. You get 4 clone troopers, which are at best marginally painted. they do stand some 2 and change tall.
Right.
There's 4 of them in the pack. They're undynamic in any sense whatsoever. They're nothing like the Star Wars Unleashed pieces. This should not be called Unleashed Battle Packs. Maybe just Battle Packs. I mean, that I can understand.
Sure, a whole new line, an army builder line maybe, a miniature army builder line maybe, but...
And what is the purpose of canceling a popular line and tagging this with its title? I don't understand.
Has Hasbro gone on the record as saying anything as to what the cancellation was? Well, I haven't seen anything. I've looked.
According to my source at Hasbro, plastic has simply become too expensive.
Wait.
Plastic has become too expensive for them to put out. It's no longer, whatever their profit margin is going to be on these, the large size Unleashed figures.
Right.
It's no longer
profitable,
according to them.
But it's profitable to produce all these small figures that sit on the pegs and don't move. Because with these battle packs, with the exception of 1 or 2, I think, of the sets, I see them sitting on the pegs, clogging the pegs.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Do you know why I even have the one in my hand?
Because it's an Imperial Army, an Army builder.
Clone Troopers are part of the Imperial Army. Those of you that are keeping up, I am an Imperial Army builder. I have been forced, with a blaster at my head, to purchase this.
It's a shame. It's a shame that they took what could have been so good and killed it prematurely.
They started to thankfully started to get away from your Luke and Leia and Anakin and Padme, who was really hot in this line, and Vader. And they started to do other characters that were like, wow, like IG-88? Bosk?
Well, people love the bounty hunters.
That
only made sense eventually.
The blue chick Jedi with
Aura
the
Sing.
No, Aura Sing is the bounty hunter.
Oh, sorry.
But they did her too. The
Ayla something or other.
Yeah, her. With the blue, with the tentacles.
Right, right.
They did her as one of the best pieces they've done. And she is an obscure character.
Mm-hmm.
Not as obscure as Aura Singh, who they also did, but obscure.
Right.
And they could have gone on. I mean, they were touching on all six films here.
Right.
They had the Luke from in the X-Wing outfit from Empire Strikes Back. I mean, they really had a wide variety to choose from. They were selling. There's none of these sitting on the pegs. If you go out right now, go to your local whatever. Go to KB. Go to Toys R Us,
Walmart,
wherever it is that you
Target.
Go. Yeah. Go see if you can find something called Star Wars Unleashed actionless figure. Stands about 6 or 7 inches tall. I can't even remember who was in the last line. But you go and try and find one of these pieces.
They're rare. They're hard to come by, and they're rare. As a matter of fact, one of the few places you could find these would probably be eBay. You're not going to find them in a store. You're going to have to find them secondhand from a dealer or a vendor that has them and looking to get rid of them.
And they're not cheap.
Not at all.
Some of them are really retardedly expensive.
I've been trying to find a Stormtrooper for close to 6 months. I don't think I've seen but three probably in the 6 months that I've been looking. And the price tag on them is anywhere between $60 and $100 every time I see one.
Yeah, and the Vaders, there's what, three or four Vaders?
Yeah, I think three or four.
And especially that first Vader.
Mm-hmm.
The first Vader, and I think the one that they did where he had a removable helmet.
The unmasked Vader, yeah. Very, very hard to come
very
by. Very
hard
popular.
To come by. So I think we're going to make this our, if you have the means, I highly recommend picking one up. Whoever your favorite character is, chances are they probably have, at this point, they probably have them out there. So try to find them. Try to get a hold of them. And we definitely recommend you picking one of these up.
Definitely.
Well, I think that that's going to bring us to the close of episode 2 of Geek Stuff.
Definitely.
The search for episode 3. What did we cover? We covered some news events.
Some news events. Joker, who might be playing Joker in the next Batman film.
In 2008.
Yeah. Who might be directing the Watchmen film if it ever gets made.
In God knows when.
And whether or not the Blade television series will suck or not.
And the answer is yes.
Okay.
And we also covered V for Vendetta. You went and saw the movie with me. And I read the book by myself. And we compared and contrasted the two. And I think our conclusion there is that the book is always going to be better than any film.
Mm-hmm.
But this was an exceptional snapshot of the book.
And that you should see the film and read the book. You'd be gypping yourself otherwise. Next, we covered Pirates of the Spanish Main and all of the expansions that came out. And I think where we left off for today is that we're going to play this weekend. And we'll come back to you next week with some talk about gameplay, how it pans out, how Kevin does. As a first-time player to the game.
I'm going to slaughter you.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And finally, we closed with our shock and dismay and disappointment in Hasbro's canceling of the Star Wars Unleashed line. At least the Star Wars Unleashed line as it originally was intended as 5, 6, 7-inch plastic statues. Not really action figures, but statues.
Correct.
And replacing them with these awful Unleashed battle packs with four 2-and-change-inch figures that really are rather subpar even for Hasbro in regards to quality. I just, I don't know what else to say about that.
I don't think there's anything left to say. It was an early death for the line.
I'm really disappointed in that one, I got to tell you one more time.
Me too.
Coming up next week, it's Geek Stuff, episode 3D.
Dun-dun-da!
So that's what we have coming up next week. It'll look and sound like it's coming right at you. I think it'll be fantastic.
And on that note, we cue the music.
Dead blood in the streets, it's up to my ankles. Sheep blood in the streets, it's up to my knees. Sheep blood in the streets, the town of Chicago. Sheep blood on the rise, it's following me. Sam!